Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. I have a 13-year-old son and he has a lovely girlfriend. They're very sweet together. Like any young teen, I'm sure they've probably kissed. My problem is that my son the other day asked if he and his girlfriend could go up to his room and watch a movie. I panicked and told him that I needed to go to the shops to get some milk. I froze at the thought of my son being in his bedroom with his girlfriend. I don't want my son to think I don't trust him, yet at the same time I feel uncomfortable with the situation. Am I overreacting, or how should I approach such a sensitive situation?
I'm really interested in what the parents of young teenagers listening are going to say to this, but for me, you can adore this girlfriend, you can trust your teenage son, and you can still say no. You cannot go to a bedroom and close the door alone with your girlfriend. Mm. I think this is one where you have to take up the role as parent in charge. And it's not that you're unreasonable or you're being fuddy-duddy or you're denying them a right to privacy, because of course they have that right to increase privacy at this age, but not at a cost of parental boundaries. That's the line for me. You are clearly not comfortable with this. Like, clearly you're not.
What does
bailed.
Having milk have to
yeah,
do with
like,
this?
So was that a yes? So I think it is okay at this stage to go back to him and say, you caught me on the hop there and I didn't really know what to say. So I panicked and I went to the shop for milk. But really I was panicking because I realized that's something I'm not comfortable with. So my answer is no. And that's okay. It is okay to go back and say that. And I think...
Well, now, she didn't mention a door in that question. If the door is open...
Well, that's what I was just going to say, that there is a kind of middle area on this, that you could suggest that they watch a movie together in the family room, where, you know, you're going to be either side of it, or, you know, there's a door you can see through, or that, yes, they go to the bedroom, but the door stays open. Hmm. I think that's about boundaries, though. That's about saying,
oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
But, yes, but. If you've younger siblings around, they can be a really convenient way to blame them and
yeah.
say, you know, I don't want to give them the wrong impression, or, you know, but that you will say that, okay, I understand if you don't want to use the family room because they're probably in and out and annoying you. Mm. So I'll do my bit and distract them so that you can have privacy. But here is the boundary. I really think that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be
13.
Probably.
13. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. My husband and I went through a difficult patch 6 months ago when we almost broke up. It came out that he cheated on me during a blistering argument. Our 11-year-old daughter overheard everything. She took the news hard and has gone from loving her dad to complete aggression towards him and has even lashed out at him on several occasions. None of us can take this situation anymore and things seem to be going from bad to worse. How can I get my daughter to forgive her father like I have?
Oh, do you know what? You just can't. You can't make her forgive him. And this is a really difficult situation. And it was a really difficult situation that she learned about in the worst possible way. She
yeah.
learned about it by overhearing a heightened emotional argument between her parents. At the age of 11, it's that middle childhood phase. And, you know, I've mentioned it before, but it's really relevant here that children of this stage of development have a really pronounced sense of fairness, justice, what's right, what's wrong. They're very clear on that as they see it.
Mm.
Now I hasten to add,
yes,
as they
course,
see it.
Yeah.
But also at 11 years old, we still kind of see our parents as being right and good and wonderful, and to learn in a really crushing way that you're not who I thought you were and you've done something to hurt somebody else I care about and you've hurt me. I think she's really angry, but there is context to her anger. So you can't make her forgive him like you have, because I don't know how you've reached the point of letting this go. I don't know, did the two of you go to couples counselling? Did you go for counselling? Did you sit down once that blistering row was over and talk it through? I don't know any of that, but she wasn't part of that process. Mm. However you've reached this point of I'm okay with it, she was not overhearing that and a part of that.
Yeah.
She's overheard it at its worst when things were really bad. So I think for me, I would be saying sit with her together, the two of you, not mum taking this on or dad, but both of you, and empathise with what she has heard and how she heard it. So take responsibility and say, you should not have heard that and you certainly shouldn't have heard it in the way. That's our fault that we had that row in front of you. And I think you take responsibility and then invite her to share her feelings. Let's talk about what you heard and how that felt for you. Now, you're not saying everything is okay. Mm. But you're allowing her to say, look, that was hard and here's how you felt about it. So you can emphasize, and I really do mean that about the parental boundary here, that it's okay for her to be angry and upset, but it is not okay that she would yell or hit or lash out, that that behaviour will not be tolerated at all and must stop. That she will find another way to talk about being upset and angry and you'll help her, but she cannot hurt anyone. For me, it seems that repair is needed to heal what has been a very real rupture in this family relationship, that betrayal has entered it. And children this age are very, very vulnerable to that and very sensitive to it. So rupture is fine. Rupture is a normal part of every healthy relationship, so long as it is followed by an experienced interactive repair. That in this situation may take the guise of family therapy with you all going together. In fact, I would be strongly encouraging that. And I think you've got to get back to having some fun together, that go back to when the relationship between she and her dad and all of you was at its best, and start celebrating those things again. But I feel she needs a space to process what she's been exposed to, because I think she's too young to work it through herself. So family therapy and or some individual therapy for her. But I would like you all to sit together and approach this in a very open way.
Yeah, it'll take her a while.
Oh, it's definitely going to take her a while. And be realistic about this, that how she repairs, it's not that the relationship is going to go back to what it was before she knew this. She can't unknow this.
Yeah.
You cannot have her unhear what she heard and how she heard it. What you're trying to do is give her space to process it and to integrate the learning from that, so that it's part of your family story, but it allows you all to get back on track. But it's about learning a new way of relating and being together, because this is now part of your story.
Mm. And yeah, as long as, you know, I'd hope that the mother is genuinely okay and she has forgiven him after 6 months. Which
it's a really short period.
Sounds like a relatively short period.
I had that feeling myself going, you know, before you give her lots of reassurance about this, be really clear yourselves as to where you're at. Maybe you are, maybe you're currently working it through, but don't make promises to children about, look, at it's all done and over with, we will be staying together forever. Mm. Really don't make those promises, because this is already fragile. And I hope that is the case, but I'm very slow to give children guarantees like that in these kinds of situations.
Yeah, well, maybe, as you say, a family therapy situation might
would be really
help
helpful
as well.
Absolutely.
Really. I have a 7-year-old daughter. She's very inquisitive and we encourage her to ask lots of questions. Nothing is off limits. She's become very involved in her school when it comes to all things about the environment, just like all her friends. However, she's gone from being concerned about climate change to being anxious and deeply upset. I found her in her room crying over this, saying we're all going to die. She started to wet the bed and I'm deeply worried about her. What should I do?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, eco-anxiety is a real and increasing thing. I hear and see this more and more, actually. And I think we can all go into, oh, look, we'll blame Greta or we'll blame whoever. It's not about that. It's about looking at how can we work through this. So that's sounding like an eco-anxiety to me, but also I'm very concerned that she's wetting the bed, because that has escalated for her and she's holding onto it as a worry. So the important thing here is don't dismiss her worries. Don't say, don't be silly, that won't happen, or that's over the top. Don't do anything like that, but sit with her and break them down. Okay, talk to me about your worry. Let's write it out. Let's draw it out. Let's think about that together and what that actually means. And go through it. Acknowledge as well for her that, yes, this is a scary thought, and that you've been hearing things in the news and on TV reports and you're a little bit scared about it too. But what you've done is you've done some research and you've talked to some people in groups like Friends of the Earth or whomever, and you've got this information now, because that's what you're going to do. Get leaflets, pamphlets, whatever information. They have plenty of resources and you're going to sit together and learn more about it. I think one of the best ways to approach this with children when they're worried about anything like this is to lay the groundwork, you know, make her part of the solution. So watch a nature documentary together, go for forest walks, go out, walk by the sea, by the beach, and really experience nature and the environment together. Talk about the science in a child appropriate way now, but talk about what you know, and then focus on the kind of solutions and skills that you can have at a micro level. You know, talk about because of what we know, let's all as a family make sure that we separate out our rubbish, that we really use our compost bin, that we start planting things in the garden that are really helpful, that we make a little insect hotel or whatever it is, and that we look at the bees and do whatever it is that make her feel, yes, we are doing something and I'm part of that doing, because the doing will take her out of that exclusively thinking, ruminating, worrying space.
Yeah.
So that she's doing the solution rather than just thinking it. I think talk about as well all the changes that global governments are making. Try to stay positive on that and stay away from the ones that we feel are dragging their heels and not doing enough. Start to look at this is such a big issue in our elections. This is something that this government or this party are looking at. Look at their policies. Let's think about that together. Why don't we write a letter to our local TD and ask them to write back to us and tell them what the government is doing and what policy is. Mm. I think involving children in civil process like that can be really, really helpful. So really start by checking in what she currently knows. What is it she's heard that she's blown up in her head? Like, what piece has she latched onto? So what is it that you currently know? And
in fairness,
tweak that as
she
necessary.
She might have a piece of information that isn't blown out of proportion,
no,
really.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of adults
who
feel exactly the same.
I think that's the thing. That's why I don't think we should dismiss this.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with a small child about, you know, what global warming meant. You know, and small children are just so great at making things relatable. And I think this little boy I was talking to had such a good way of doing this. He said it was like the earth had a duvet and they were still using the winter duvet when it was time for the summer duvet. And it was just
pretty well
too
pushed.
Hot. So we had to find a way of changing the duvet so everybody would feel more comfortable and the earth would be more comfortable. And I thought that was such a nice way to do it, that we're all working together to decrease the tog of the duvet and make it more habitable. So I think using a child's language is really helpful because they're so visual and they paint pictures in their heads for what this looks like. I think check in with what she knows. Be honest but appropriate. Admit you're finding it hard too and that it is scary, and explain solutions that are being explored and what you can actively do together in it.
Yeah, because this often reminds me of, because it was generations of children who grew up, maybe not so much in Ireland, but with the idea that the world could end at any second because of nuclear war.
Yes.
And they were told to get under their desks, and even a 7-year-old to know, that's going to really work.
Absolutely. But look at the school shooting situation in America, and children who are being trained what to do if a shooter enters the building. Like, children are dealing with really real life scary situations. And I think as their parents, the temptation is to take that away from them and don't be scared and everything's lovely and everything's fine. But actually, we have to give them space to be scared and to talk about what they're afraid of so that they can move past it.
Yeah, we do have to take a break after that. A biting dog.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us. And Joanna's been dealing with a few questions already. The first one was about a couple who have been going through a difficult patch because in the course of a row, the father revealed to the mother that he cheated on her. Now, this was overheard by their daughter, obviously, and she's 11, and obviously she hasn't reacted to it very well. The mom needs to sit down with the daughter and explain her reasons for forgiving her father. The daughter may decide she's not ready to do the same, but at least allow the opportunity to understand the thought process. Somebody else suggests that I should talk to her and let her say her piece. Don't dismiss her because she's 11. No, indeed not. I don't think anybody, the mother wouldn't have sent in this question if this is being dismissed. But as Joanna had already suggested, it might be one of those family therapy situations where just to keep a lid on things so everybody can hear what everybody else is saying without things getting too emotional, which it's very understandably they could. There was also a question about a 7-year-old who's become very anxious when she hears about climate change. My son and daughter have become very involved in all climate activity in school. We've changed a lot of what we do at home and made it a family thing, so we all work together and make it more fun than upsetting and stressful. Or at least we try. I mean, family arguments still happen. We're only human. Well, indeed that's the case. Who's putting the fear of God into her? Is it the school or her friends? A bit of perspective for her wouldn't go amiss, says under the text. Well, I don't know what you mean by perspective, though, really, in that, you know, how do you put the possible demise of the planet into perspective? Oh, it could be worse. I don't know if it could. Anyway, next question is this. A month ago, our beloved family dog had an accident and had to have surgery. When in recovery, my four-year-old son was playing with him and got too energetic and hit the dog's wound. The dog was startled and snapped at my son. He didn't bite my son, but it gave him a real scare, so much so that my son is now terrified of the dog. He screams, shakes and runs away from the dog now. My husband says we may need to get rid of the dog. If this continues, that would devastate my other children who've grown up with the family pet. What can I do to help my son overcome his fear of our dog?
Oh, gosh. I mean, look, I think getting rid of the dog might not necessarily get rid of the fear. I don't know that they're one and the same thing. Mm. And I think it would be better, if possible and safe, to help your son to work through the fear. I think a little bit is about making this relatable and engage his empathy. So maybe ask him to remember, or help him remember, by telling him a time that he had a sore arm or a sore leg. And if anyone touched it, or when you went to put a plaster on it or cream on it, that he jumped or he yelped because it was sore. Mm. But you didn't mean to hurt him. You were trying to take care of it, but it was sore and he reacted. And then say, so that's what happened to the dog. You know, when you were playing and his sore got touched, he just yelped because he couldn't help it. Mm. So that you make it relatable in that very empathic way. And I think that should help a good bit. But I'm also wanting you to go, but now the sore is gone. I'm assuming it is, by the way. Now the sore is gone and the dog is back to being the dog and there's no more of that yelping and snapping. He never did it before. He hasn't done it since. It was just about the sore leg or whatever it is. Other than that, I would reach out to people like the DSPCA and ask to speak to a dog behaviourist. They're so good at helping children around fears around animals and how to play and behave safely around animals and pets. I think that would be well worth doing.
Yeah. I wonder, is he terrified of dogs in general now, or just that?
That's what I wasn't
dog.
Sure
yeah.
here, because it was very specific to the family dog, which is, I suppose, my hesitance as this parent identifies. I don't want to just get rid of the dog. It's clearly a special part of the family and the other children would be upset. But I also can empathise with, I don't want my son, you know, wet in the bed and getting upset and being terribly frightened about this. I would explore a few middle grounds before you make a decision like that. I also would worry that if you just got rid of the dog, your child will displace that fear onto all dogs.
Mm, yeah. But given that he's only four, might he have developed that idea yet of, you know, I touched the wound and I got snapped, that kind of set of consequences, which really only kicks in around age.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's only kicking in. So it depends on how long ago this happened. And also, you know, it does kick in around this age, but it's not like they wake up at the, you know, fourth birthday and go, nailed it, got that. They do it around that age. So he might not have
that.
It'd
be great if that did work.
But he might not have it. So he might, that's what I think, start with something that's relatable. When you had a sore, remember this. And that's what it was like for the dog. Because he might not link, oh, I touched the dog felt a pain, that's why the dog did this. He might just be going, the dog attacked me.
Yeah. Plus also, he'll remember that. Obviously, it's a very vivid memory. When he's a bit older, he realised that, you know, maybe Rover didn't go to live on a farm, as they often go to do.
No, Sean, they all go to farms.
Yes,
that's all true.
Morning time is an absolute nightmare in my house. My children are aged 10 and 6, and the 10-year-old is just impossible to get out of bed for school. He has never been good in the mornings, and this year it seems to have gotten worse. There is shouting and screaming every morning as he protests to the point last week that I should give up. And he stayed off school. I don't know what to do, and I'm afraid that his younger sister will begin to pick up on his bad habits. I'm at a loss as to what is making him act like this. I've tried talking to him, but he just won't open up to me. What should I do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing he's never been good in the mornings, but there is a country mile between not being good in the mornings and shouting, screaming and swearing and staying off school.
Mm.
Like, that's a huge escalation. And when you say, you know, this year, we're a month into this school year.
Yeah,
that's quite a dramatic escalation. So I'm really curious as to what else is going on here. And I think this parent is too. The time to discuss it with him is not when he's shouting and roaring at you in the mornings, but is when he has de-escalated and is calmer. And talk in terms of, you're going to school. That's not negotiable. So you're talking in terms of, what can we do to make it easier to get up in the morning? What changes can I make and what changes can you make?
Yeah.
And take that kind of approach. If we got the bags packed and put them right beside the door, if we had the table laid, if the lunches were packed in the fridge the night before, look at that, I've just saved you 15 minutes. Now you get to stay in bed that extra 15 minutes. But your part of this is you've got to get up. Beyond that, talk to the school. I would involve the school in this, to be honest. Parents have a meeting with the school and say, you know, look, this is what we've noticed. It really has escalated. It's getting unmanageable at home. He actually missed a day of school because of this. And ask them what have they noticed or how do they observe him settling or engaging in class. Schools are, you know, typically will observe a lot in September and may not bring parents up if they're worried because they're like any of us going to see, well, look, it's only a month in, let's see how it settles. So I think it'd be worth doing that. And maybe, if appropriate and the school agree, have another meeting with your son present so that he's part of that discussion about, look, you've got to come in. Here's what's going to happen. The other piece I want to throw into the mix here is a question for the parents. What is the routine currently around bedtime?
Yeah.
A child of 10 years old, the optimum is 9 to 11 hours sleep per night. Otherwise, they won't be able to get up in the morning and function. The absolute minimum would be 8 hours, but really 9 to 11 hours is what they need. And some children really need that sleep so that they can function. I would also be interested, I'm not asserting it, but inquiring rather, have you screens in his bedroom?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Yeah,
because he might be in bed, but is he in bed? Yeah, so I'd be really clear, no screens in bed, and actually no screens for an hour before bedtime to ensure that he is wound down enough to really draw benefit from a restful sleep. But I think you've got to go back to your bedtime routine here and again involve him and go, this isn't working. Yeah. We have to find a solution, and what we're going to try is an earlier bedtime or no screens in the bedroom or whatever it might be. I think, and do it now because you are at the start of the school year. Be curious about what might be going on in school. It is a dramatic behaviour shift, so I'd like to know, is something else going on?
Could he just be, though, a really heavy sleeper?
Some really cranky pants in the morning. Like he could just, I mean, that's what, he's never been good in the mornings, but never been good in the mornings is different to what she's then describing. I'd be interested and curious. But yes, some people are just, we all know people who are just not morning people.
In my own, like some of them are like, you know, up exactly the same. Oh, them, yeah, I just had to drag them out of the bed to get them to school.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you can do that, but they get to an age and a physical size where dragging them out of bed and cajoling them. And what I'm hearing here is there's another child to get to school, so I can't let this child make everyone late. Yeah. The only thing I'd say is if this point where you got to, he's not going to school today, I would, you know, if it's within your scope, be dropping the six-year-old to school on time and I'd be coming home and say, you got to go in late and tell the teacher why you're late.
Yeah. We've had to downsize our home and go from a house where each of my children had their own bedroom. Now two of them have to share a room. They're 11 and 9-year-old boys, and all they do is constantly argue. It's the source of round-the-clock angst in the home, has even led to a physical fight. I'm afraid this will escalate and someone could be hurt. What can I do?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't know how long ago you've moved or how recent this change is, but a move is always stressful for everybody involved. And I think as well that they're adjusting. You're all adjusting, to be honest, but they're adjusting to sharing a space when previously they didn't have to. So there's a bit of territorialism that's going to creep in.
Yeah.
This is mine, this is yours. And I'm not going to say get some masking tape out and draw a line down the middle. You know, let's not go there just yet. but I think the important thing is, as the parent, is that you don't get pulled into the tension as a referee or adjudicator because, my goodness, you will lose every time when you do that. You do, in the heightened state, need to separate them from the action. Maybe everyone takes a small, short period of time to cool down. And then try this. OK, it's probably going to take me longer to explain it than it would take you to do it. But have them sit down with you. You sit in the middle. They're in a chair either side of you. And each tells their version of what just happened, exactly as they experience it. And the other one cannot interject, cannot comment, just has to wait until child A has finished. And then what you're going to do is have the other person reflect back exactly what they've heard their sibling say without adding in, that's not right, that didn't happen. Then they tell their story and the other child has to reflect back. What you're trying to do there is facilitate and or mediate a negotiation, but you leave the ultimate resolution to them. The only interjection you put at the end is, and now what needs to happen for us to move on? that you want them to increase their empathic awareness of each other, consider the situation from another perspective, be aware of the thoughts and feelings that underpin the actions and words of each other. 9 to 11, that's a really important life skill to start getting in there. And it also, it may be that they just go, oh my God, I don't want to sit and do that again. So let's not let this get to the stage where either parent is up here bringing us in to fix it. But I think it's something that they resolve, not you. Then as soon as that's done, have a few things in your head, and there definitely is a few things that you know they do like to play together, or they do play well together, and redirect them to something like that. And the final thing I'd say to you is, in general, increase collaborative play. So, because they're obviously competitive and they're within a developmental swing of each other to be competitors. So collaborative play, where they've to work out things together, work on something together. They're a team against you, so they've to work well together, turn-taking, reciprocity. Any of that type of play, increase that in truckloads. Truckloads.
Still though, two boys in a room together, padded walls.
You're just trying to manage it.
Joanna Fortune, thanks a million. We'll take a break, back in a minute.